Major is here, like all of our guests. He's on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. I was hoping, sir, I was going to look to my left, and all of a sudden you're going to surprise me and pop up at the Minnesota State Fair. We have to make that happen one of these years. Before we jump into the conversation, a man just walked by wearing a kilt out here at the State Fair. It's absolutely packed, and he looked great. Dave, did you see the man in the kilt?
I did.
Yeah. Yes, let's guess, Dave Harrigan. Has Major Garrett ever in his life worn a kilt? Dave, you first.
I guess no, but I think there's a bit of regret. I think he wishes he would have at some point worn a kilt.
I'm going to say yes, that he was a part of an event. He's told me many times he's very proud of his legs, thinks he has very attractive legs. And so I'm going to say yes, Major has donned a kilt before.
The answer is no.
Oh, my gosh. What about next time you're filling in for Nora? I mean, you wouldn't give us the copy machine. Would you finish and there's just one last, like, you know, subliminal moment where it's you looking great, one of your suits, but then down below, you're wearing a kilt?
Yeah, Chad, by definition, there's nothing subliminal about a kilt.
I mean, I'm trying. How about if I send you one? I don't know where a kilts are us. I guess I'll track it down. All right, let's jump into the news of the week. The vice president became the presidential nominee. Kamala Harris faced the most important speech of her life. And as I said on the Twitter machine, and you know this so much better than I, politicians and presidential candidates get very few opportunities when you get potentially tens of millions of people watching you. And the vice president had that moment last night. And I'm not suggesting that she won over Republicans, and I'm not suggesting that she won the election last night. But I thought for what she wanted to do, that she delivered an impressive speech and met the moment, and this razor sharp close race is fully in play. But if you're the vice president and your people close to her, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't be pleased off what happened last night.
I think that's a fair assessment. I will say this. We resort far, far more often than we should in the media to the cliche most important speech of his or her life.
Right.
Especially now in American politics, everything is a continuum. And a great speech can be erased by a fumble or a stumble or something accidental less than 24 hours later. Okay.
All correct.
Things do not last with the kind of nostalgic permanence that we associate with an earlier, less chaotic media environment than we currently live within. However, the speech is a culmination of an effort of 4 days that had a purpose to it and a sense of unity to it and a sense of bottling up a kind of pre-existing enthusiasm and displaying that enthusiasm for 4 days across the national media spectrum. And that's harder to do than it sounds, especially when you've had less than 3 weeks to do it. Okay? Because you can't plan a convention a week out or 2 weeks out or 3 weeks out. The last week before it, everything is basically set. Mm-hmm. Yes, a lot of these things were put together on behalf of President Biden, but not exactly. And to carry off a convention also to make some pretty hard decisions. One, do you or do you not place a voice in support of Palestinian civilians on the convention stage? Forgive me, I'm in LaGuardia Airport. That's why you hear the overhead.
Yeah.
And ultimately, after lots of back and forth negotiations, the Harris campaign said, no, I'll address it myself. I'm the nominee. I will deal with this issue. Secondarily, and related to this, there was much worry, concern, speculation, and on the Republican side, anticipation that there would be something very destabilizing about protests in the street, mar the convention, mar the atmosphere, deep in the sense of division. That didn't happen. Accomplishing those things are no small tasks, okay? Yep. Conventions are not just about upside, but they're also minimizing downside. And this team, with very little time to prepare for it, accomplished many of those fundamentals. And Harris was the capping event of something that was coursing through all four nights, which is this. We have great atmosphere, Democrats. We have great vibe. We have a great sense in this building. But this race isn't won, and we are going to be knocked back on our heels, and we better work and work and work and then work some more because this is tough business.
Let me bring up a couple points that critics, Republicans of the vice president, have offered up on a fairly regular basis off the speech. That the biggest issue in this race is pretty much the biggest issue in every race. It's the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And that Republicans look at the economy and say, it hasn't recovered fast enough. This is on the Biden economics that we were told about over and over again. And now that Joe Biden is out, that the vice president has inherited that, and she did not address that enough last night. And then the age-old debate of when you have a convention speech, how much is broad strokes, how much is the personal story, how much is about the future versus how about some specific policy points? So on the economy itself and the lack of specific policy positions, and prominent Republicans have made that point repeatedly, what do you say to those folks?
So the central question that Kamala Harris had to answer in developing the speech is one that we addressed last week. She didn't address it because we raised it, but I will take some credit. What is she? Is she the incumbent or is she the challenger? She gave a challenger speech last night. I'm the challenger, even though she's the sitting vice president, inheritor of all the administration accomplishments and detriments. She didn't talk about that nearly as much as she did the future and who she is. That's what challengers do. Who am I? Who am I not? How am I going to be caricatured by my opponent and what you really need to know about me, what you need to know about my central values? Go back and look at Bill Clinton's speech in 1992. The first 7 minutes of Kamala Harris' speech and the first 7 minutes of Bill Clinton's speech in 1992 are almost exactly the same in that they are wrapped around a strong mother, a strong set of values, and a strong sense of orientation to place and future. That's not an accident, okay? These are both introductory speeches rooted in something that is definitional for a challenger, not an incumbent. And when she leaned into economic policy, she didn't lean into inflation except to say, I'm going to do things to combat higher prices. She leaned into housing. And here's an interesting thing that the polling data always shows that people in my world consistently overlook. If you want to talk about an economic issue that transcends geography, party, and class in this country, it is housing.
Mm-hmm.
It is housing.
Yep.
What do you pay as a renter? What do you pay as a homeowner? What do you pay as an aspiring homeowner? It is absolutely cross-party, cross-geography, cross-class. And Harris's people have zeroed in on this because they believe there is political potency that is not more important than inflation, but is counter to an inflationary argument she'd rather not have. Leave the inflationary argument to Jerome Powell and the Federal Reserve. Okay? Let them wrap themselves around the axle of what is or isn't inflation and what they will do about interest rates. Go straight to housing. Because she has a very reasonable expectation that interest rates are going to go down and housing might become more affordable. When? In September, October, and November. That might not hurt. So I think that's an interesting approach that they've taken.
Let's do this. You're going to talk to LaGuardia. You're going to get them to stop talking the rest of this thing. I think that's Dave, do you think it's reasonable that Major could talk to someone at LaGuardia?
It's expected.
Yeah, we're expecting Major to go get them to. I mean, there's only one flight going out of LaGuardia right now, right? It's kind of a quiet, just little small town airport, LaGuardia. We'll put Major on hold. We'll come back. We'll talk about what happens next in the race. And how about Bobby Kennedy Jr.? What's going to happen today? The Fabulous Major is with us. It's 47 past 12 on CCO. It is 12:51. That is the Lindus Construction Time Check. Time to make your home more energy efficient with GAF Solar Roofing. Let me get to the most important item before we get back into politics with Major. A most sincere, my friend, happy birthday. Tomorrow.
Well, thank you.
Yep. Not a lot of people realize this. Major sounds good. Fine timber. He is 97 years old. 97. And he's still working.
That's right. I'm 3 years away from my Smucker's anniversary. That's
yes.
Exactly.
I mean, a lot of plastic surgery. You're hoping for the ghost of Willard Scott to wish you happy birthday tomorrow. You know what I think of you, my friend. It is a true pleasure, most importantly, to be your friend. And we absolutely love having you on. So I hope tomorrow is a joyous, joyous day for you.
Thank you very much.
Let's get to Bobby Kennedy. Today, Arizona, he's going to say he's done. Is he definitely saying he's done and throwing in with Donald John Trump?
Who knows? And it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. Remember, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. met with Trump in Milwaukee, and there was a lively set of conversations and an expectation then that they might align. But Trump, for all sorts of proper and logical reasons, felt very much that the race was very winnable, if not already won. The party was unified. He was coming off this enormously traumatic and electrifying and iconic moment, horrible in every respect, but nevertheless, yep.
Sure.
With political value in Butler, Pennsylvania, he didn't need Robert F. Kennedy Jr., so he didn't cut a deal with him. Now the conversations have re-engaged because Trump is not where he was then. He does need some kind of spark, even if it is a minuscule spark in the person and personage of Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who brings as much baggage, if not more, than any number of votes. So whatever happens in Arizona, I don't think is as central to the future of this campaign as it is in one respect. Trump needs something that he didn't need in Milwaukee and is making a reach for it now.
So if we expect many of these swing states to be very close, and in a reasonable amount of the polling, Bobby Kennedy Jr. was getting 2-3%, isn't that still helpful? But we just can't quantify how helpful it might be.
Well, the way to think about that is not 2016 and say, oh, look at the amount of votes that Jill Stein got and Gary Johnson got. Those were meaningful, extremely meaningful, but they were meaningful because there was a strategic decision on the part of the Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton not to pay any attention to them and to believe their own polls, believe their own sense of inevitability, not campaign in Wisconsin, not campaign aggressively in Michigan, and therefore Trump wins. None of those assumptions are a part of the Harris-Walz orientation to this campaign at all. Third parties matter. The Democratic National Committee has been hounding and dealing with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. aggressively back when he was at 15 or 17 or sometimes 19% of the polls to describe what he is, address what they regarded as his shortcomings, and make sure that his ballot access was adhering to the rules. And any time it didn't, suing him to block him. Okay, so there is a definite awareness of the potential problem a third-party candidate like Robert F. Kennedy could present. That has identified and, to the Democratic Party's sense of belief, minimized any votes that would otherwise go to Harris to go to Kennedy, point one. Point two, the idea that third-party candidacies of any kind are immaterial is not part of the Harris matrix, and the idea that they have to campaign aggressively across all of the battleground states and do so relentlessly, regardless of what the polls indicate, which was not the Hillary Clinton approach, is also different and strategically important. Doesn't mean they're going to win, but it means they are sensitized to things in ways that Hillary Clinton was utterly blind to or indifferent to.
I got about 90 seconds left. We're 18 days away from the first Harris-Trump debate. Any big benchmarks to watch before we arrive at our second debate of the political season, but one person will not be making an appearance?
It's essentially the first debate. And look, Trump has announced that he's going to have some sort of January 6th awards gala at Bedminster. the week before the debate, which completely baffles me. It has only thing to do with base politics and base mobilization. And if Trump is there in early September, that is a terrible sign for the Trump campaign. For Trump to win, especially against an aggressive, organized, and now fully energized Democratic Party, he has got to expand beyond the Trump coalition. And doing anything to celebrate January 6th does not. It just reinforces his base devotion to him. And the key metric between now and the first debate is, does it continue to appear that political gravity has for the first time taken hold of Donald Trump? And he cannot reverse Harris's momentum, and he suddenly looks something like he has never looked in American politics, which is human and fragile and vulnerable. That's the key between now and the first debate.
Is Harris a very slight favorite at this point?
I think she's a slight favorite, and all the polling metrics show that. But she has rebounded into competitive positions in all the battleground states. Now North Carolina is unequivocally a battleground state. 6 weeks ago, Republicans said that is done and dusted. We don't even need to spend any money in North Carolina. That is no longer the case. And Florida and Texas have begun to creep into the conversation. Whether Democrats spend any money or there or not, probably not, but they're creeping into the conversation. And those races have implications down ballot. And if I'm Ted Cruz and if I'm Rick Scott, I'm much more worried about my electoral prospects and my reelection prospects than I was 5 weeks ago.
I got to jump in. Travel safe. Have a great birthday. We'll talk next week.
See ya.